The seeker moves in the opposite direction of the hurt. So if you have the ability to see that this is not a good space, you negate that sensory experience, you do not indulge it. So the senses don't go to those sense objects, and the mind doesn't get into a more active mode. The whole idea is to reduce mental thoughts. You see, it is affecting the psychology of society. I'm seeing more and more youngsters, teenagers in practice, being brought by their parents with all sorts of symptoms. A common one I saw in the last week is fatigue. And the youngsters are saying, you know, this is how I think about life. I'm trying to keep body weight of this sort. My hair color needs to be that. My waist has to be that. And I often ask the question, why do you do that? And the youngster, teenager, can be 13, 14 years old, will say, so that I can feel good about myself.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. Here we get to chat to some of the world's most interesting and influential people about everything to do with physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. If you want to make healthy changes and live a better life, you are in the right place. Please don't forget to rate, leave a review, and share with everyone who wants to live their best life. And now your host, Nikki Robertson.
Are you one of the many millions that suffer from fatigue? Do you sometimes feel that you don't have the energy for life that you once had? In this episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast, I chat with regular guest Dr. Sandeep Ruda on the topic of fatigue. As always, Dr. Ruda invites us to think beyond the obvious and look not only at the physical, but also the way we're choosing to live our lives. I hope you enjoy this episode and it inspires you to take on new and exciting challenges.
One of the most common complaints that patients are visiting practices with is fatigue, a lack of energy, a lack of drive. They may, you know, say it in different ways. You know, I'm feeling worn down. I can't go on. I'm waking up unrefreshed. I get a dip in the day. There's a lack of motivation. And some may just say it at the mental level, suggest that they're feeling a lack of ability to concentrate. There's no inspiration, you know. So it's a very common symptom, probably the primary symptom we're seeing. And then it may be associated with other things. I think the second most common symptom we see is weight gain. So fatigue and weight gain are the two. But we'll stick with the fatigue today, you know. And I think it's something that needs to be discussed, because when there's fatigue, there's sort of an impulsive approach to trying to sort it out. And I've said this before in our podcast, in a world of over-information, misinformation is used to control the public mind. And yes. Perhaps a little discussion on how to approach fatigue so you can find the root cause is important.
Yeah, and I think it's so complicated because we're looking for a mysterious reason. And we're not taking care of the basics first. So let's jump in and like really understand, you know, the fundamentals. So often people come to me and they say, I'm exhausted. I've got no energy. My energy dips during the day. And the first question I ask is, are you getting enough sleep? And many people go, no. It's like, well, you know, what do you expect?
Yeah.
So we kind of expect our bodies and our brains to go at 100%, but we're not prepared to do the work to balance that. So yeah, let's go there.
Yeah. So we could, you know, separate or discuss fatigue around in compartments depending on the cause. And I think it is important that if you're suddenly feeling a symptom, and fatigue is not a diagnosis, it's a symptom. So if you're suddenly feeling a change in your ability to do what you traditionally have been doing, I think it is important to question why, because there's a law of cause and effect. If the effect is fatigue, there has to be a cause. And the first thing to do is make sure there isn't some medical problem. And before going into all the rare esoteric medical problems, the important thing is, like you said, to go back to basics, right? So a good practitioner will do a thorough history with the patient, you know, and you're looking for things that may point towards a deficiency or some metabolic problem. So, you know, for the sake of the podcast, I mean, we can mention a few, otherwise you'd be here the whole day. So at the physical level, the most common causes of fatigue we'll see perhaps cardiovascular disease, chronic obstructive lung disease related to smoking. At the metabolic level, you're going to see diabetes, obesity, thyroid disease, anemia, which can be due to various deficiencies. One of the common ones I see is in menstruating women, iron deficiency, you know. And then, interestingly, vitamin B12 deficiency is not that uncommon in practice. And this is even in patients who are non-vegetarian. You know, we assume that vegetarians are prone to vitamin B12 deficiency. And I'm seeing that more and more commonly, and that may speak to the poor nutritional quality of food and that sort of thing. So those are a few at the physical level. Medications that you can be on, like antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, yes, blood pressure medications, antihistamines, you know. And then patients who have been diagnosed with a psychiatric condition like depression, anxiety, anorexia, or other eating disorders, people going through grief, bereavement, especially now in this COVID pandemic, we're seeing a lot of that, loss of a job, you know. And then stress in itself, which is a big topic. We've done that and we probably need to expand on it at some point, you know. So these are the things a good physician will go through, the history of these things. And I tell you, 90% of the diagnosis is in the history. And then you may want to do a few basic blood tests, you know, a full blood count to look for anemia, thyroid level, check the vitamins. Maybe you want to check inflammatory markers to rule out autoimmune disease as well, you know. But having done all of that, it is not uncommon, Nikki, that we don't find anything, you know. And that's where the problem comes in. And we need to then address the lifestyle aspects and also prevent patients from going into, we often see the Google patients, you know, who read a lot on the internet. Before they even have had a good objective history and examination and blood count done, they're already taking some rare, you know, mushrooms from the internet or some superfood or energy drinks or smoking something, or, you know. And I think we must advise caution against that because, that my law is anything that brings instant gratification is going to be bad for you long term. So nectar now becomes poison later. You know, so that's sort of a basic approach. But, you know, I don't know what you think. I'm sure you see it in your practice, too, that these are the types of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And when you say nectar becomes poison, the first thing that comes to mind is caffeine, because I think, you know, we've been led to believe until we understand the difference between energy and when our adrenals are just going on too high. They're just pumping out adrenaline because we've added stimulants to the mix. And many people are so used to having large quantities of caffeine in the morning. And that isn't energy. That's simply adrenal overload. And as far as I'm concerned, real energy is a quiet thing that keeps you going for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need topping up. And to really understand the difference that I hate to call it abuse of a substance such as caffeine, but it is kind of, because over years of needing more, like any drug, when you find that the dose doesn't work and you have to keep topping that up and eventually something's going to give. And this is always, I mean, I was drinking all sorts of caffeine things when I was studying, and I think all of us were to some extent, because you just needed to, at least even if it was just psychosomatically, stay awake and focus, but it doesn't work in the long term. And we see a lot of this. And really it is going back to basics and simplifying what people do and just getting the fundamentals right. And yes, we do jump to all these magic wonder pills and promises, but I'd say 99.9% of the time, it's a total waste of money.
Yeah,
you don't see a change until you do the basics and do the work.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head about that approach, that it doesn't work. And this is your experience too. But I think it's important perhaps for our listener to expand on why that is. You see, if you can understand that, then you don't have to suppress a bad habit. You understand it and it falls away. But it also gives you the opportunity to find your energy then, you know? So
yes, I think that's a great approach. Yeah.
So the first thing is, so outside of medical diseases that we've just suggested, once you've had a thorough, a large proportion of the fatigue we see is some form of chronic fatigue, not the syndrome itself, which has some diagnostic criteria. And that's where patients reach for things to stimulate the body to produce more energy. Now, what's the problem? The first thing is you mentioned adrenal fatigue, which is not really a medical diagnosis, but it's a descriptive term we use. Now, why would a person get adrenal fatigue? It's because they're in a constant state of stress. And stress is defined as a mental agitation due to unfulfilled or interrupted desires. Now, the traditional stress from evolutionary biology is survival stress. Once you're engaging the predator, your stress system is activated, and then you fight or flight. Now, either you're going to survive or die. If you die, it's not of any concern anymore, right? But if you survive, you get back to the village, you sit with the village elders, you tell them your story, and there's a debriefing. They almost laugh at you, but there's a learning as well. You learn how to cope with that stress in future, either go prepared or weaponized, or not go to that part of the jungle at all again. And the next day, you're smiling and carrying on with your work in the village, and the stress is gone, and there's no mental agitation. The adrenals restore, and you have wonderful energy, right? Now, that same system today is being activated nonstop, not really because of a survival threat per se, but a lot of perceived threats, you know, through worry and anxiety. So we have worry of the past, anxiety of the future. And that system is working over time, and it can't cope all the time, you know. So this is the concept of adrenal fatigue, the physical deficiency. So actually, if you want to fix it, you shouldn't be stimulating the autonomic nervous system more, because then you're living on borrowed energy. And eventually, you're going to burn out. And this is what I find with the caffeine takers and all sorts of stimulants, lion's mane and everything else. It works for the moment. Now, none of those stimulants in the past were designed to give you a boost in the way we use it in this age of productivity, competition, fight or flight. I mean, coffee is part of a culture in Ethiopia. There was a relationship with the earth. You cultivated it, and then you took it with gratitude, and you understood that whatever it invokes in me in terms of energy, I use for communal good to do my work for the village, the population, or the country. You see, so there's an unselfishness in that approach, where today's approach is more, I need to get by, I need this, it's my fuel. And then businesses develop around it. The coffee culture has just gone crazy. It's so academic now.
Crazy.
It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But humans have to do that to justify their use. Otherwise, they look like addicts. This is what we do. We build things around it to make it look cool, to make it fashionable. It's a culture. And I think, I'm not saying it's all wrong. I'm saying we got to question that. So I think now we understand why that tiredness happened, why stimulants don't work in the long term. But what do you do then is perhaps what we need to discuss. And, you know, I don't know how you approach it. Perhaps you have some thoughts before I go into mine in terms of how to solve it with them.
Yeah, so it really depends on the individual as well. For me, the first thing that I really question is not only the length of sleep, but the quality of sleep and what you're doing in and around sleep, because setting up the mindset before you try and recuperate is critically important. So there's so much to sleep. And many people still believe that they can get by on 6 hours a night. And there's so much to disprove that. But also, I would like to ask you what you think about circadian rhythms and energy and fatigue. If we are not in sync with if our circadian clock is running backwards or out of sync with where it should be, I should think that's a big trigger for fatigue. And the problem is you don't see it happen immediately. This is something that is a slow boiling frog, and it happens over a couple of years, and you can't really go, you can't pin it on anything.
I think the word rhythm is very important here. You know, the special feature of life is energy. Everywhere you look, things are moving. There's an energetic rhythm from the microcosm to the macrocosm. Look at the planetary movements, the galaxies, the cosmos itself. It's energy and there's rhythm. The microcosm, subatomic particles, nanoparticles, atoms, you know, our blood is moving in a rhythm according to the heartbeat. There's seasons to the body as well. We spoke about it in our menopause podcast, you know. So everything is in rhythm. Now, the degree of expression of energy is different in the different species, right? But for the human being, our superiority lies in that our inner energy or will force is dependent on our rationalism. We have the dilemma of choice and self-effort, you see? So all the other species are protected by nature. It's like clockwork, nocturnal animals, migratory patterns, reproductive cycles. It's like clockwork, even the seasons, right? So nature protects all other species. But nature has given the human a rational intellect to govern the mind. And when we live by the whims and fancies of the mind, we live out of rhythm. And that's where all the desires propagate. And there's too many desires and all of them don't get fulfilled. So you're stressed all the time. So living in rhythm means for the human to apply that God-given self-effort in a form of rationalism, intellectual governance of the mind within the paradigm of the laws of nature, not to try and live out of them. So sustainable living ought to be that we develop technology and science, which we are doing, but not to try and force nature the way we like it. It should be that we are more effective within that paradigm to achieve higher goals. And science has certainly shown that. I mean, we mentioned it. There are these clocks in the body, in our DNA, in the higher centers of the brain, all over the body that are aligned to the solar cycle, etc., even the seasons to some degree. And that sleep cycle is of critical importance, you know. So it's not how much of sleep you get. It's also the time of day that you get the sleep. And the ideal time, looking at evidence, experience, and even some religions and philosophy, getting to bed by 9, 9.30, the hours between 4 and 6 are a great time to wake up and do your intellectual work, spiritual reflection, that sort of thing. And after 6, it's a good time to get into the work of your physical work of the day. And after 6 in the evening, you ought to wind down, get more devotional, switch off all the stimulus, which we do the contrary. We're on the internet, we're on our phones, we're on the WhatsApps. Blue light is everywhere. We're getting excited with TV shows. And we ought to wind down with that. The other thing that happens at night automatically is all the negatives. Professor Harry Seftel used to call it the sexing, the sozzling, the smoking, the gambling, you know, all of that stuff, slot machines used to call them. So there's a natural tendency to go down in life. But that self-effort, that rationalism pulls you up through intellectual observation of the mind. And it's not suppressing the mind. I think when we talk like this, people think like, you know, you're going to become some sort of religious zealot who says everything is a sin. And the important thing is to realize that it's not about suppression of the mind, but rationally directing the mind to higher ideals over time. Yeah. With that, you can get immense energy. It's not creating energy. You see, our prerogative as humans is the underlying structure is infinite energy. It is obscured like a dirty mirror by all these mental fluctuations. So the work of life is not to create energy, but to clear the dirt on the mirror so you can see your true reflection, which is infinity, you know?
Because the energy is there. We're just trying to move it around in a way that...
Exactly.
Again, you know, when you said rhythm, what came to mind was how human beings in the Western world are so living on the antithesis of what rhythm is. You know, like you said, the whole universe moves to a rhythm. The human brain and the heart has a rhythm, and we control around that. We try and manipulate around that. We try and get that in line with how we would like it to be, and it doesn't work. It just simply doesn't work. And the more we fight the natural rhythm, the more, well, it's like pushing a wave. If you can't do that, you've got to go with the ocean, otherwise you're going to drown. Yeah. And I think that's something to think about. It's really, before you start fiddling with substances and worrying about your iron levels, is to ask yourself, am I in sync with the natural order? And to what extent am I not? And how can I find some sort of, how can I hear that rhythm again? And I really know, because I've seen it, because I've experienced it myself, is the profound energy you get when you start becoming aware of the pulse of what's really out there, and you hook into that.
Yeah, you're alluding to the what some people call today the concept of flow states, you know. And you mentioned, you know, the Western world is out of that flow. So the first thing is, you know, in the West, there's a lot of action due to competition, productivity, and want for achieving more materially. What's happened in the East, though, is there's inner peace, but no action and dynamism, you know, over years of oppression and changes in the world. They've maintained the inner peace to some degree, but there's a degree of inertia as well. So what you want to do is marry rhythmic action and dynamism with a higher purpose with inner peace. You want the best of both. And that's ideal flow state. The reason it's gone into this in the West mainly is because of a lack of what I call scriptural ordinance. The knowledge of the eternities or of life, the art of life, which is how to regulate your interaction with the world. So how does the mind and intellect relate with the objective world? That is not taught. What we are taught is theoretical knowledge to make money, which is just simple survival. And the problem is ego captures that process, you see. So that process is ego-driven, and where ego's involved, there's going to be selfishness and worry and anxiety, you see. So you want the dynamism, and spiritual growth or self-growth or inner growth is nothing but decimation of the ego. And you'll find that most people, when they are in a state of feeling relaxed in themselves, when the mind is stiller, when they're giving rather than taking, they feel that flow state, you see. So the prescription to get into flow state is actually that we encourage watching the intention in our actions, whether they're selfish or unselfish. And unselfish action will propagate, eventually metamorphose into selflessness with long work, to develop objectivity, reduction of egoism, which reduces to worry and anxiety as well. And you turn the worry and anxiety into learning and planning. And part of that is you've got to set an ideal beyond yourself. Any work you do, it mustn't just be for selfish gain. It must be, how can I use my ability? When you kindle energy in yourself, you can't hold on to it. It's bad for you. You've got to give it into the world, you know? So
you do, and you get get it back with interest.
Exactly.
Funny enough.
And you mustn't desire that interest. If you just do for the sake of doing, like a tree gives oxygen, it receives what it needs from the clouds and the soil. You see, that's the idea that we want to get into. That society will flourish because everything has a role. You know, the man who cleans the garbage off the streets is equal to the CEO of a corporation. You're doing work for work's sake because of your ability, and it all contributes to the collective good. And that's a very dynamic, energetic society with inner peace. And no fatigue, actually, you know, that's the idea. So it's important to be aware of these things. I think we are a long way away from that. But today's effect is a multitude of past causes. So we got to maybe just pause, reflect, and say, right now, where do I seek this knowledge on how to engage with the world? That's what's lacking right now, is the intellect is not developed.
Yes. Yes. I think the situation of the last years is forcing a lot of us to think differently, because there's no other option anymore. And those who can go, well, you know, perhaps there's another way, are the ones who are going to survive and thrive. Mm-hmm. And those who are going to keep forcing the system are going to continually get sapped of the life force. Mm-hmm. And I think this is, you know, it's just nature's way. But this also ties really nicely into a subject we've spoken about many times, which is joy and happiness and that flow state. Mm-hmm. And, you know, giving for the sake of giving, you get the joy back in return. And many people that I talk to who come to me with energy or lack of energy, in fact, I've actually seldom come across anybody who says they've got enough energy, they feel they've got enough energy. It's pretty rife. It's a pandemic in itself. Mm-hmm. But almost nobody says to me, yes, they've got joy in their lives, they've got something they're striving towards, they've got, you know, they do things for the love of it, they've got things that fulfill them in their lives. And this is something we work on trying to find, because you know, you can have a shocking diet and you can have all sorts of physical problems. But if you have a purpose, meaning, and passion in your life, as you've said so many times, it does override that state to a great extent. And there's a massive psychosomatic interplay between state of mind and state of physiology. And I think it's really important that people start maybe entertaining that thought, that their brains are driving their physiology to a bigger extent than we give credence.
It's a very important subject. You know, the purpose of life in the end is the same as it was in the beginning. It's we want happiness, right? But if you examine the question of where is happiness to be found, in which spheres, is it in the body? The answer, you will come to your own conclusion. Don't believe me. Examine it. It's not in the body. Right? It's not in the car. It's not in the person opposite you. You know, one philosopher, my teacher, my guru, always uses the example. He says, there's a lady married to a man, and the man wants to divorce her because he's agitated by her. But down the road, there's another man who is very happy to see her and he wants to marry her. So if joy or happiness is in the object, then everybody would be gravitating to that person, you see? So it's not in the person, it's how you relate to it, you see? That's important. Cigarette is, you know, great for one person, but another person finds it detestful, you see? So where is the joy or happiness? It's in something else. Now, that question is coming up everywhere, that nobody's finding happiness in anything. And that alludes to what I was saying earlier, is when the question comes up, people start trying weird stuff. And this is why when I said scriptural ordinance and I used the word eternities, what I meant by the eternities is we tend to read a lot of other people's ideas of where happiness is to be found. But the eternities refers to the knowledge of life and how to find happiness that is applicable 10,000 years ago today and will be applicable 10,000 years from now. And these laws have been written by great men. We call them sometimes prophets and sages. So we know of men like Christ and Prophet Muhammad and Buddha. I mean, his works are known today. But the important thing is, remember, those works were written at a time that was applicable for that nature, that geography, that mindset, you see? But the law itself, like a mathematical equation, is what needs to be extracted and study today with our modern mindset. And we need prescripts for this modern technological world, you know? I mean, that pure knowledge I've mentioned to you is called Vedanta knowledge, the culmination of. And, you know, that's the type of thing that needs to be studied and infused into various sectors of science, technology, economy, politics, family life, all of that. Yeah. Then when you got the tools, you can relate to anything. Then we are on our way to recognizing that happiness, which we already are, is how I would say it. It's not about creating it or finding it. Yeah. And maybe one more point, the way it was said is there's a tendency to think the body is going to give us that and we have to change physiology to do that. Your mind is a subtle structure, which is beyond body. Body is physical, it's gross, it's organic. Even the brain, you know, the mind is above brain. And above mind is intellect or rationalism, which needs to, and beyond that is observer, you know. So it's a very tough topic to talk about because these subtler things, and you're not able to cognize with your senses. It's easy to measure the body. It's easy to see the body. It's easy to do a blood test. So we want to change that which we can sense with our senses. But the subtle things which require a bit more effort, little abstract thought, that's what eternal knowledge is about. And that's what we're being invited to investigate. So in a time of crisis, it's important to have that knowledge available to guide humanity. That's important.
And I think, you know, as I'm listening to you, what comes to mind is that we've also got to choose the energy that we saturate ourselves in. So the people we associate with, the conversations we have. If the energy or the level of energy of the conversation you're having with someone who's really negative, it's going to pull your energy out, it's going to sap you. Sometimes we can't always choose who we work with, but we can always choose who we have fulfilling conversation with. So it's really important, I believe, to find people who you feel uplifted by, who you can have positive conversations with, because it inspires us to think beyond the physical. It inspires us to ask these questions and wonder, isn't there something more to the universe than what we see in the mirror and what car we want to drive? So, and I really believe that's lacking in many societies. It's we're just not seeing as much of that because people are separated. We're not in societies or villages where there's, like you said, you'd go to the elders and you'd have a frank conversation with somebody who has something fulfilling to share with you. And we're just not seeing that anymore. So the energy we get off the social groups that we choose to be with is critically important for our minds and our health.
It is important. There's an ancient Sanskrit word called satsang. And satsang, literally the translation means company of the good, right? But when you say company of the good, remember in all of these ancient texts, it was never good people doesn't mean everyone else is bad. The idea is that all of humanity are good, but where we see bad, it's just goodness bereft of a guide. So the idea is that we're all in different levels of growth. Yeah. And that's why I always say we don't stand in judgment of others. But if you personally feel that there is some higher type of calling that you require or that appeals to you, then it is your prerogative to seek that knowledge from those that are higher. And like everything in nature, you know, soil is everywhere, fertilizer and manure is everywhere. But to find gold or diamond is rare, you see.
Yes.
So those rare humans that have the highest knowledge, they got to be sought. And that's the idea of a seeker. A seeker is one who wants to go within himself to unfold through knowledge these higher truths. And sometimes it appears in the form of company of good. And that type of company, as you move in that spectrum, tends to become less and less people. And the sensory, materially driven world will have less appeal to you, you know. And you're right. I mean, in ancient times, because of awareness of this kind of process of, moving or evolving in life, human evolution is not at the body level. It's into the subtler concept, back into the infinity. They would structure society like that. A lot of the casteism, which is misconstrued today in the East, sort of like a Brahmin class, a Vaishnav class. So, you know, in India especially, there's this idea that, you know, if you're of a lower class, you can't touch the Brahmin class, you know. But that casteism didn't exist thousands of years ago. It was just some sort of broad classification to assist people in functioning well in society, you know. So the Brahmins would be the intellectuals that guided through thinking. The Kshatriyas were more physically aligned in their nature. So they would become astute scholars, but also warriors, protection of the kingdom. Usually the kings were the Kshatriyas, you know. Then you get the accounting and administrative class. Then you get the labor class. And there was no inferior superior separation. It was that you function for society. And if you wanted to move between categories because you see that your nature is that, then through self-effort and work, you do that, you see. Then the ego captures the process and then you see the casteism. I'm a Brahmin, I'm higher than you.
Okay.
But the point is to seek the company of higher people was they were accessible. You know, you go with a question and you go to a Brahmin and you say, you know, in my work, this is an issue. How do I think about it? So they had the satsang. The entire city, the entire population has the satsang or company of the good. Nowadays, it's rarer to find, you know, and our family structures, you're correct, completely decimated.
I think the lowest energetic order would be probably social media, where it's a facade. You're not really, you don't know what you're interacting with. You're interacting with a mirage of what somebody pretends to be most of the time. And it's not a realistic view of the world. And, you know, what really worries me is young people who don't interact with their families, don't have a sort of a solid family background and support, who are putting many, many hours of their energy and their lives into a multiverse that is actually very transient and very ego-driven. And that's very frightening. People are worried about viruses. I'm really worried about the psychology of humanity going forward if it's all based in this sort of pseudo-reality and what that does for our energy and our health in the long term.
Yeah, the social media space, from what we said earlier, that which is of value is rare. If you look at the social media space, easily accessible, billions of people involved in it, and billions of people depicting all sorts of mind-driven activities rather than rational activities. I'm even seeing mature mothers doing strangest things on social media, some of these videos that someone showed me the other day. And I thought this is very strange. As a species, that we think we're at the peak of civilization, that this does not sort of make sense to me. And this is analysis, not judgment. I'm saying what's being seen out there. But the law is then, if you are seeking higher, that, you know, the seeker moves in the opposite direction of the herd. So if you have the ability to see that this is not a good space, you negate that sensory experience. You do not indulge it. So the senses don't go to those sense objects, and the mind doesn't get into a more active mode. The whole idea is to reduce mental thoughts. You see, it is affecting the psychology of society. I'm seeing more and more youngsters, teenagers in practice, being brought by their parents with all sorts of symptoms. A common one I saw in the last week is fatigue. And the youngsters are saying, you know, this is how I think about life. I'm trying to keep body weight of this sort. My hair color needs to be that. My waist has to be that. And I often ask the question, why do you do that? And the youngster, teenager, can be 13, 14 years old, will say, so that I can feel good about myself. And where did that come from? So in the first 10 years of life, all kids are learning by absorption. It's mirror neurons. Sanskrit word for that is udana shakti. They absorb the environment. So the parental influence and the home influence and community influence in the first 10 years of life used to be a big influence in the past. But today, the first 10 years of life, the majority of the time is on the social media spaces, you see. And the parents will say, I didn't teach that, you know. Where did they get that from? But the parents providing the access. Sometimes it got to be cruel to be kind. I'm not saying what parents should do and shouldn't do, but if you analyze cause and effect, then we will see that there is a problem here. And then we have to do what we ought to do, whether we like it or not, in terms of curbing that. But social media is a mind space, and that is a dangerous place, in my opinion. And I think we've got to be cautious about that. Because it's happening and the technology exists, doesn't make it correct. You know,
yes, it doesn't make it okay.
Yeah. And in that space, there's a very little higher knowledge available to access. And in fact, it will get drowned, because in that space, you can become a celebrity overnight. Ego is amplified. You can make money overnight. And the idea that all of this can be gotten instantly is dangerous, because, you know, the best of us is he who pays. And we got to pay with some work to gain in the long term, delay instant gratification. Yeah.
it couldn't be further from the rhythm of the way things should be functioning. It's probably the furthest from the rhythm of what life should be. So let's go back to the question of fatigue from a physiological standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that many people, because you know, there's a lot more information out there, come to me with is it must be my thyroid, which what do you think about that? To a lesser or greater or lesser degree, I'm not convinced that thyroid is the governor of everything, but a lot of people seem to put so much weight on it. If I'm overweight, it must be my thyroid. If my hair is falling out, it must be my thyroid. It's like, let's chat about that briefly.
Yeah. I think we'd covered some of it, that if you do have these symptoms, then do a basic medical check. And if there's a deficiency, like iron, replace it. So treat the cause of the fatigue. If you have a thyroid issue, underactive thyroid, rarely an overactive, then treat it. Understand that, when you're treating hormonal deficiencies, it takes time to see the change in your body. And once you've corrected these hormonal deficiencies, treated an underactive thyroid, checked levels 6 to 8 weeks later, and you still got symptoms, a residue of symptoms, then you go into all this other stuff we've just been speaking about. But you should be doing that anyway, eating right, sleeping right, fueling your body appropriately and not overfueling it, getting enough activity, that 1 hour of exercise every day, and that's consistent, you see. The reason why people would go to something like the thyroid, which is a common and easy one to talk about, is what I said earlier. If you don't know how to engage or understand the subtle causes of fatigue, like worry and anxiety and stress, then the easy thing to do is just measure something and give me a pill. You see, that's how the mind works. It wants that. Now, that shouldn't be ignored. The body should be treated like a vehicle. You need to service it, it gets a scratch, okay, you want to give it a little paint, but ultimately it's the vehicle that takes you through this experience called life. But your life is not like completely dependent from a mental perspective on the body, you see. It helps to have a good body, it helps to maintain it to some degree, but understand it's a carbon-based chemical structure which is going to change over time and go back to the soil,
yes.
You know. But the thinking personality that is housed by this body, that's the thing that needs work right now. Our personality isn't what it ought to be, you know.
Yeah, and it really comes back to when you see these amazing success stories where people who've been battling with obesity for years and suddenly it seems, it's not sudden, but it seems that they lose weight overnight, or they have a remission of an illness. And very often when you say, what happened? They go, well, I just changed my mind. I decided I didn't want to play this game anymore. And that was really all it took. And I've seen this countless times. And, you know, the question came up before, what does it take for people to heal? What does it take for people to change? And again, the answer is you've got to have no other option. There's no quick pull. There's no quick fix. There's no way out. There's nothing you can drink that's going to fix this. It's a decision you make from the bottom of your heart that changes everything. And I think that's possibly the most important message, is are you desperate enough to do the work to make things different?
You know, Nikki, life is love, and the universe is love. So even when people are suffering from what we call disease, for example, obesity, as you mentioned, whatever the causes were that led them to that, you will either change life due to the random routine route, which is full of knocks and shocks. So you don't think about causality, but, you know, the torrential flow will take you, hit against a rock. But that pain of hitting against a rock should stir your mind into thinking, maybe I should start steering myself to avoid hitting into the rocks. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And that takes the person. So those knocks and shocks of life are actually somehow the hand of providence guiding, and there's love in it, actually. And
yes,
then that person says, I'm going to change my mind. And that becomes a seeker who says, now I've seen when my mind is like this, these are the knocks and shocks that come. So I'm going to go into my self-work and develop that intellect and guide this mind to avoid the knocks and shocks. But in that, they get better health and they're curbing the mind. That's the idea of shell work. And that's called the planned, purposeful path of a seeker versus the random routine route, RRR, you see? So either way, if it's RRR, it's just going to take longer and knocks and shocks and many lifetimes perhaps, but we will get to that happiness. Or you can say, hey, I've learned from the mistakes of others. I can see this. Let me just do the hard stuff. Let me get into this knowledge. Let me, you know, pursue this higher truth. Then you're fine. Then you get energy. You'll be inspired. You won't have fatigue, you know. You'll get a few challenges here and there, but you'll be able to ride the waves like a good surfer. And that's the art of life, is not to avoid things, not to go headstrong, but just ride the waves. Yeah.
Ride those. I think that sums it up really well. And that is the secret to avoiding fatigue, is to ride the waves. And I love the metaphor of becoming the seeker, because it feels limitless and like there's infinite potential in seeking. And you just don't know what surprises you're going to find. And that is energizing in itself.
It is. I think if you look at Leonardo Vinci's Vitruvian Man, that work of art, you just look at that picture and you try and figure what he's got, the geometry and the proportions and this body enclosed in the geometry. But you've got this man sketched with his outstretched arms. What are they pointing to? Infinity. They're saying human potential is infinite. And it was the Stoic philosopher Seneca who said, most powerful is he who has himself in his own power.
Yes.
You see? So every philosophy, Christ said, kingdom of God is within you. For those that seek it, there you find it. Prophet Muhammad said, what you're looking for is closer to you than the camel's neck, you know. Buddha, Krishna, they all alluded to that inner, the Atman within, it's the infinite. So they've all touched on it and they left these breadcrumbs for us. We're caught in the sensory world. We just need a question and then gently start pursuing it. Yeah.
So I think this is a really, really good way to sum up what we've been chatting about, is to light the fire under your own ass if you're feeling tired. And go and find what you're looking for. And there's not one thing that you're going to find or one thing that we're all looking for. This is the journey of life. It should be an ongoing process. So yeah, that was an incredible and uplifting and such a powerful conversation. So thank you so much for that. I think I'm feeling so inspired now. I don't know what I'm going to go and do, but I'm hoping that anyone listening feels really motivated to really start looking at how they're thinking and what they are judging and how they're doing life and if they're doing the work or not before they start running around swallowing things that make promises that really don't deliver. So thank you again for your extremely valuable time. It's always, always so good.
Thank you, Nikki. Thanks for the platform. It's already there. Just clear the dirt. That's all.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you once again for joining me for another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. As usual, all of my guests' details can be found in the show notes page on Apple Podcast, Anchor, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate on Apple and leave a review.